Stay tuned for Time to Talk with host Jennifer Graziano of Zion Memorial Chapel and Cox and Graziano Funeral Homes. Jennifer is here to discuss a sensitive subject we all need to talk and think about. Here now is Jennifer Graziano and Time to Talk.
Good afternoon, Westchester. It's 12 noon on Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk with me, Jen Graziano. I am a licensed funeral director who oversees my family's funeral homes, Cox and Graziano of both Mamaroneck and Greenwich, and the Zion Memorial Chapel of Westchester. Every Wednesday, I come to you discussing important topics and sensitive matters that all of us need to pause and reflect upon at some point. And through this show, I hope to provide a platform to do so. If you're joining us this afternoon on 1460 WVOX, welcome everyone, and hi to Gerald in the control room, and welcome Facebook Live viewers. Happy to have you here, and thanks to Tim Judge behind the camera. So I'm joined today by a guest who was with us in the winter, which I was able to tell by seeing our last photo where we were in turtlenecks. But she's back because the topic that she's discussing affects us at any point in the year in our lives. We're talking about mental health. It's something, a subject that perhaps is a bit less taboo than it used to be, but still taboo enough that a lot of people don't seek the necessary help that they need. And as I said this morning to Bob on the morning show, we treat our physical ailments, our bruises, our broken bones, our physical health concerns. So why stop there? Mental health certainly merits our attention. So I'm welcoming Alyssa Preet. She is the founder of Knot and Clover, a therapy practice counseling service located in Southern Westchester, servicing the whole county at large, but she's located in Mamaroneck, so she's kind of like my neighbor, and we share a lot of mutual friends. So I'm happy to have you back on, Alyssa.
Thank you. Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be back.
Yes, we had a great discussion last time, and I know you're very passionate about mental health and counseling service for youth, mm-hmm. but I think what we'll touch upon a bit today, too, is everything at some point in our lives needs to be dealt with, mm-hmm. and if you don't deal with it today, you're going to deal with it tomorrow.
Yep.
Be it the actual tomorrow or years and years down the road. When we have our, we have an in-house grief counselor, and when she comes on, mm-hmm. she talks about triggering events. Mm-hmm. So a person could lose someone that they love, and then 10 years later, there's a triggering event that makes everything resurface, mm-hmm. Perhaps more so if it was left untreated at the mm-hmm. onset. So let's talk a bit about your experience with... what happens if these issues are left unchecked and untreated?
Mm-hmm. So it's a great question. It's really important to address this. So it depends on the person, and it depends on the mental illness, the disorder that's going on. If it's a child and they're not getting treatment for whatever reason, the parent's decision, either they didn't recognize it as an issue, as a mental illness, or stigma or embarrassment with bringing them into treatment, it can really run the gamut of what happens to a person.
Right.
So you have everything from the condition worsening, of course, if it's left untreated, and then that leads to an avalanche of other issues with, I think, on the very end of the spectrum being suicide.
Which you do see on the rise in teenagers.
Right. And about 90%, more than 90% of suicides are attributable to untreated mental illness. So it's really preventable. So it could be from that extreme suicide, and then also just having difficulties in interpersonal relationships, not being able to get through school or hold down a job. Let's see what else.
I think, though, you know, again, I don't think any of these issues are new, and I'm just speaking mm-hmm. from my perspective. I just think there's more of a recognition. Yeah. And what I think you're finding is that perhaps even in younger children, there are signs, early stage signs, anxiety being among mm-hmm. them. And I think anxiety is kind of something we cast a net, and you know, and it kind of encompasses a mm-hmm. lot. But it's certainly real. And I think, you know, especially if you look at children and the activity load that they have, you know, young students, you know, kindergarten, first grade, get homework, and mm-hmm. there's always a lot going on. So it's logical to understand how it can happen. But, you know, sadly, not that it's a blame it on the parents discussion today, but at, you know, ages, the young ages, they don't know what's going on. They don't mm-hmm. recognize what it is, and they mm-hmm. don't really know any way to cope. Mm-hmm. So it's so important for parents and children to be on the same page. And your counseling services really address these specific areas. Mm-hmm. You'll work with parents to help them with the issues plaguing their child or affecting their child, and you'll work with the child themselves, correct?
Right. You don't want to assume as a parent that it's something that your child will grow out of if it could get worse, but it's like such a delicate balance. It's like, what is this? Is this just normal everyday stress? Because now, like you said, with schoolwork and everything, there's so much pressure on them now. But if it's turning into something else or you notice any alarming or concerning behaviors, then you certainly want to just have them talk to someone.
What are, in your experience, so what are some of the signs that often go undetected?
Mm-hmm. With younger kids, it can manifest physically. So if your child's complaining about nausea or like stomach aches a lot, that could indicate some anxiety. Also, if you notice any kind of skin picking or touching of the hair, any kind of repetitive behaviors, any physical complaints that they're having, that there's nothing really wrong with them, they don't have a fever, doesn't look like a cold or anything like that, it could be a sign that there's some anxiety going on. And really young kids, they don't have the language to express to you that I feel anxious or I feel stressed. So it's important to keep an eye on them. And you know, as a parent, you know your kid and mm-hmm. and their everyday behavior, and then you can tell if there's something
wrong. There's a change. So then yeah. let's move on to the, you know, the older child, mm-hmm. which, or the teenager, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. we'll go from there to there. What are some of the signs?
Could also be the physical complaints, isolation, not enjoying things that they once did. It's hard, especially with teenagers, with all the hormones and the changes that they're going through, to identify what's a moody teen versus
right. There's depression there's an issue here, right?
Yeah.
Alyssa, talk about depression, because it's something that we hear all the time. Mm-hmm. Is it something that at some point all of us face, or is it really that clinical, what makes it hit the level of that clinical diagnosis?
For a clinical diagnosis, there needs to be a depressed mood for 2 weeks or longer. And then some of the symptoms are changes in sleep, changes in appetite, feelings of hopelessness, helplessness, worthlessness, any thoughts of suicide, isolating from people, pulling away from activities that you previously enjoyed. So any kind of significant changes in your mood and normal behaviors.
So all of this that's affecting the child trickles up to affect the family unit at large or the parents. When you have a child experiencing this, talk about what you tend to see, the effects on the family unit.
Mm-hmm. It can be really hard. It can be frustrating for parents. A lot of the times they respond with anger because it's just so frustrating. It's like if you have a 15-year-old, you kind of feel like, what do you have to be so depressed about or sad about or stressed about? You're only 15. Mm-hmm. But there is this, it's a very real change in brain chemistry and what they're going through. And being a teenager is so different now with social media pressure and comparison to others and yeah. the academic pressure that we've seen. So it can really put a damper on the relationship between parents and the child. And then the parent is just in this level of frustration and anger, and they don't know how to deal with them effectively. And then in turn, the teen will get more withdrawn and frustrated and maybe not speak to the parent about what's going on, what they're feeling, because it's just they don't get the response or the validation that they need.
It's a multifaceted issue, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a teenager. I will, but mm-hmm. she's you know, at the age of 7, there's so many things that I fear and worry about or see and notice. But, you know, when you add, I think historically it was always kind of an awkward time for parents and their children. Mm-hmm. But when you compound it with social media and, you know, first of all, the ability to monitor them yeah. and to keep a presence in their digital life, that's got to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, social media just creates these false images that are affecting self-image.
Right.
And it's really, I can't imagine what a tight rope that you walk as mm-hmm. a parent. So some of your services, do you find that a person is best treated when the family becomes involved? Because I think at any age, I think that's an issue. At what point do you seek, in the counseling for oneself, do you bring others in, because none of us are an island in and of ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, we directly impact our family members. At what point do you suggest group counseling
with the family?
Yeah.
I think anyone 18 and younger needs their parent or family present. Not every session, but it affects everybody. And just kind of being there to help the channel of communication between the parents and the child is really helpful. If the child feels like they can speak to their parent about what they're feeling, what's going on, and be open with them and get a response that's validating and empathic, we teach the parent how to respond to them and kind of tone down the frustration, which is so understandable with the teen. But it's very important to have that and to know that there's this open channel of communication between them.
So let's go back to, you know, and you have some great blog posts that we're going to talk about in a minute. But again, what's left untreated younger? You talked about suicide being a possibility. Mm-hmm. Let's talk down the road, though, a person who has just always swept it under the rug and years pass. And then they might think it's just too late to get help or treatment, or they think that the issues that have made them this way just happened so long ago. Mm-hmm. How do you encourage somebody to seek help no matter what age or stage that they're in?
It's never too late. It's never too late to be happier and more satisfied with your life. And I think you touched on it earlier. Nothing ever goes away until it teaches us what we need to know and mm-hmm. how you change it.
So true.
And so everything, the way that you respond to situations based on what you, when you were a kid and what happened to you, it's going to keep coming up as patterns. And it might have served you when you were younger and it was kind of self-preservation, but as you get older, you realize the way that you're responding to things are not healthy and they're not helping your relationships and they're not helping you live a satisfying life.
So it's true. It's a great, you know, it's a never too late mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to stay broken.
Right.
You can be fixed and you don't have to feel, it's just a great message. So mm-hmm. if you're out there listening, and the focus of the show today was to really talk about what's left unchecked or untreated. And at any age, help is a good thing. And mm-hmm. I think it's a great thing to be able to at some point check in with a professional such as yourself, and you clearly have a great approach because you recognize the importance of this type of work done at youth, mm-hmm. and then hopefully you are seeking to produce, you know, emotionally healthy people going back out into the community as mm-hmm. adults. And I think emotional intelligence and emotional health is equally as, if not more important, you know, than yes. cognitive intelligence. Mm-hmm. You know, I think employers, they always say it's a new thing now. When you're looking at somebody, you are not looking just at scores and functions and abilities, because a person could be highly functioning cognitively but lack key emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And that is how you interact with people, how you speak to people, how you deal with stress, time management. Yep. So giving your kids these skills, I think there should never be shame in getting help for your mm-hmm. child. Nor for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Never, not at all. So if we can give one message today, it's to remove that stigma. And if you're seeing signs in a child or grandchild, get help now. And if you perhaps suffered from something that was left untreated, just get some help. It's mm-hmm. just it's just a great way to go through your life knowing that you can feel better. Like you said, you could always be happier. You could always be more satisfied. So right. great tools out yeah. there.
And it's not just for severe mental illness. Therapy right. can benefit everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's so true. You know, people might be saying, well, I don't fit the category of mm-hmm. someone who needs it. But you know what? Everybody at some point mm-hmm. fits a category of someone who needs something. Yep. So absolutely, Alyssa. So I want to talk about one of your blogs, two of your blogs. But this one, I know, like, it just hits home for me. So daring to set boundaries.
Mm.
Talk about setting boundaries and what that means and how these boundaries can help you help yourself.
Yep. So if we think, I like to think of a boundary as kind of like this invisible force field that you have in front of you. So your boundary allows you to live authentically. It allows you to be your true self and to take care of yourself. A lot of times, especially I think for women, we're always putting people before us, everyone's wants and needs, and saying yes all the time when we really want to say no. And then that turns into an internalized frustration and resentment. And we feel angry all the time and take advantage of it.
It's so true. And then you stop and say, but it was, you know, you forget that it was almost your decision to do it.
Right.
Because you actually do get angry. You do get frustrated that there's just so much to do. Even today, like, it's such a bad way to start your day. I'm walking up my door to work and I'm like, oh my God, like, there's just too much today. And then it's just the wrong way to mentally begin your day. I mean, everything's just going to fall from there. But again, people have choices to not overwhelm themselves and not inundate themselves. So how do you, I mean, it's great advice, but how do you do it?
It's very difficult to do. And it's really, people think that it might be harsh or mean to put in boundaries, but it's really coming from a place of compassion, especially self-compassion, because you need to take care of yourself. So if it means saying no to things that you might normally, or to events or to people that are asking you to do something, but your gut is telling you you really don't want to do it, it's okay to say no. And it's not mean. It's not harsh. It's taking care of yourself and you're being honest with the person.
Do you owe people explanations after that? I mean,
no.
No, it just be no.
No is a full sentence. It's very difficult to
no
to
is
implement
a full sentence.
But you don't have to. But you can. It's about finding what's true to you and how, if that doesn't work for you, or for, it probably doesn't work for a lot of people, because it's just very, you know, we feel like we need to explain after. Well, I can't because of this. But you can come up with kind of like your standard response that you use that's still kind and compassionate, but is firm that you're not doing this. So saying no and consequences for people who, if they violate your boundaries, because you, people need to know that this is my boundary, this is what it's happening, I'm not going to accept if you overstep that.
Right. And it's, it doesn't have to be outwardly expressed in those words, but it has to, but it has to be defined in some realm.
Yes.
And, you know, in any relationship, there's a giver and a taker. It's very rare that you have two givers in a relationship. And this could be a friendship, an involved relationship. It could be in a family relationship. So there's always one that just gives a little more. And I think that even becomes genetic too at some point. Like, you could see people who are like that. Their parents were like that. Their kids are arguably like that. But you can break the cycle. You can, I guess you can be a little selfish is what you're saying. Because having people cross boundaries, I guess, does affect your emotional and your mental health.
Yep.
In the sense that it just makes you stressed and overwhelmed. Is that it? Or it's that you just feel that you lose your voice?
I think it's a combination. If it's, if you enjoy, if you're not feeling any negative feelings by saying yes and doing something, then that's okay. But if you're getting resentful and you notice that you're irritable and you just really don't want to do something, you don't have to. And there's another saying that I like, you can't pour from an empty cup. So if you don't feel like you're taking care of yourself and your needs, then how can you possibly give back to somebody else? So it's really, boundaries are about taking care of yourself, being authentic to what you need, and then putting that out there in the world.
Interesting stuff and some great advice, Alyssa. So another thing you talk about is courage starts with showing up and letting ourselves be seen. What does it mean to let yourself be seen?
For me personally, when I wrote this blog, it was about actually being seen and putting out my business, my practice. So it's, this is a quote from Brené Brown, who is awesome. I don't know if you've listened to her before, but she's fantastic. She talks a lot about authenticity and courage and shame and vulnerability. So you have to be able to show up in your life and to do what you want to do without the fear. Well, actually, even with the fear, just to do
sometimes
it anyway.
Sometimes fear is a good thing. You know, it keeps you humble.
Motivating,
and it keeps you grounded. And, you know, no endeavor, with, you know, no great endeavor probably happened without a little bit of fear. But, I mean, great advice, though, getting past it and moving in spite of it. I think that's what, you know, really shows fortitude and courage. But how do you find that version of yourself? How do you advise clients who come to you to work in spite of fear and allowing vulnerability?
Anything that they want to accomplish that they're afraid of, it's like, well, I want to do this, but what if this happens? Trying to get past the but what
getting
if.
Getting past the but.
Yeah.
There's always a but.
There's always a but.
Some buts are bigger than others, but yes, there's always a but. So, again, you really look you help your clients, no matter what age they are, really with everyday life skills, I think. Because, you know, the stuff that we're talking about, you know, it's not as rare certain diseases, or it's not obscure. These are just being, living in this world every day.
Yeah.
Getting through your list, your responsibilities, your relationships. So you're really giving tools to live.
Mm-hmm.
And not live out of the ordinary, just live effectively.
Right.
What are some of the changes or results, I guess, that you've seen? I mean, it's not like we're talking about like tangible, measurable, like I lost X amount of pounds. But what are some of the, some of what you hear, some of the feedback, or some of the things you notice in working with clients over the years?
Mm-hmm. People express that they have less anxiety. They're better able to cope with everyday stress. They are more resilient. They've practiced mindfulness and meditation. They feel more present in their lives with everything that's going around us. Everything is moving at a warp speed. Mm-hmm. So they feel that they're enjoying themselves more, taking everything in, and just less anxiety, less negative symptoms that they came in experiencing.
So moving on to, you know, moving backwards, I guess, talking about clients and ways that we're dealing with anxiety. I know, obviously, a psychiatrist administers medication, but what are your thoughts on the subject of, do you think it's more advisable for people to come and talk and seek a more organic, natural treatment, especially with children? Or do you see that sometimes there's that need for straight medication?
I think it's helpful to bring them to a therapist first and see. It could be something that talk therapy or whatever other kind of method that the therapist is using is sufficient enough to treat what's going on. But a therapist will know if there's something else going on that they can benefit from medication. So I think it's good to check in first with a therapist, and then they can make the referral for the psychiatrist.
Gotcha. So, no, it's good to kind of just start somewhere, though, and establish a baseline.
Absolutely.
Do you see more and more families struggling overall, though, just, you know, in light of the way life is, that everyone has a million activities? Kids are so overwhelmed. When I hear about parents and the games and the travel and lacrosse and baseball, I mean, I have one kid and I feel like we have something almost every day. And mm-hmm. I never wanted to be the mom that did that, but it kind of happens inadvertently as they develop talents. But do you see that it's had like a negative impact on the family unit overall, like the busy world we live in and busy lives we lead?
I think so. I think it's harder for them to relate to their kids and to spend quality time with them. But therapy can help with that and just kind of mending the relationship, figuring out what's going on and how you can put in some quality time with your kid. It's unrelatable to a lot of parents, the social media and the activity and the academic pressure.
It's very true. I say it, my daughter's growing up in a much different world mm-hmm. than I did. Alyssa, is there something to still be said for having dinner together and family, like sitting at a table?
I think so. That's how I was brought up, and I'm very close with my family. I think it's just a nice time for everyone to decompress and talk about what's going on.
And, you know, keep in mind, you know, it probably wouldn't be the same time every night or, mm-hmm. you know, even a long thing, but some committed effort to group at some point, to regroup at some point,
mm-hmm.
With phones down,
right,
TV off. Mm-hmm. I think it just, you know, it makes so much sense, the good benefits that that would yield. So tell us a bit about your practice, where you're located, and how people can get in touch with you.
So I'm located in Mamaroneck, New York. So I'm on Boston Post Road, right by Mamaroneck Diner, actually. It's in a cute little shopping center mm-hmm. with Catul's Boutique on the bottom. Love that store.
Yes, I do too.
So you can check out my website. It's notandclover.com. You can also email me, Alyssa at notandclover.com.
And not K-N-O-T. Quickly, you said it on the last show, but I think it's great. Why did you name you? Because you don't really see, like, usually a name for a therapy practice.
Right.
It would normally be Alyssa Preet, like, you know, licensed
counseling,
clinical social worker. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So why the name?
So I picked Knot and Clover because a knot represents strength and interconnectedness and wisdom. And then clover, to live in clover means to live a life that's more at ease and stress-free. So that's what I strive to give my clients, the kind of, you know,
the trends, you know,
the knowledge and the tools to live in clover, to live a more carefree life.
That's so interesting. Your website is notandclover.com.
Yep. KNOTANDCLOVER. Alyssa at notandclover.com. And then my phone number, I actually know it this time. I didn't know it the last time I was here.
Because
I just made it. It's 914-586-3272.
586-3272. Mm-hmm. You take appointment.
Yes.
Credit cards accepted? Any insurance accepted?
I am in network for United Healthcare and Oxford, and I'm in the process of being in network for Cigna as well.
Okay, so wonderful. And again, we talked a bit about that this morning. Sometimes the barriers with insurance companies prevent people from seeking treatment.
Absolutely.
So
accessibility.
You are accessible, you are local, and you are here, again, not to give anyone superpowers, but to give them the tools they need to navigate through their daily life. That's so important. Living and living well are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a great thing. So Alyssa Preet, Knott and Clover. And again, you see families, you see children, you see teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see an older person without a family?
Yep, I see adults as well. Yep. 12 and up.
12 and up. Oh, there you go.
Sometimes even younger. 10 or 11.
Gotcha. So... No, again, you've given us great tools today, setting boundaries, checking in with yourself emotionally, getting help, talking to someone, and that it's never too late. So that's really invaluable advice, folks. And Alyssa, we'll have you back again at some point. Maybe we'll wait till it's back to winter weather, fall weather. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, Jen.
And this is Jen Graziano. Thanking you for taking the time to listen as we took the time to talk. Have a great day, Westchester. Bye-bye. 1460 W.